Welcome to Between the Lines, presenting news and analysis of critical issues affecting our region, the nation, and the world. This week we present Robert Borsage, co-founder of the Campaign for America's Future, who assesses November's election results and explains why he believes that Obama and the Democrats' best comeback strategy is to stand up for progressive values. Larry Fahn of the Sierra Club, who talks about how a coalition of environmental groups defeated California's oil company-backed Proposition 23, which would have overturned the state's Global Warming Solutions Act. And Robert Greenwald, award-winning documentary film producer and director, who discusses the role of corporate media in the 2010 congressional election. But first, we begin with a summary of some of the week's underreported news stories.
A decade after the fall of the Suharto dictatorship, Indonesia has a mixed record on respecting human rights. The national police regularly abuse and intimidate political dissidents and pro-independence groups. The record of abuses and lack of reform is a dark cloud over the administration of Indonesian President Yudhoyono. According to The Economist magazine, early reforms, which split up the national police from the Indonesian military, showed promise after the mass killings and charges of genocide in East Timor. In recent years, the military has raised few human rights concerns and has started to sell off its business interests. Meanwhile, the national police have inflicted major abuses. In June, Indonesia's top magazine, Tempo, reported more than a dozen senior police officials had suspicious bank accounts with deposits of millions of dollars. Shortly after the story broke, an anti-corruption activist who worked on the investigation of the bank accounts was badly beaten. In late August, provincial police fired on a crowd protesting the death of a local man in police custody. In the melee, 5 people were killed and 34 injured. In September, the National Police's top anti-terror unit, Densus 88, was accused of torturing independence activists in Maluku province during a visit to the area by President Yudhoyono. The unit gets funding from the United States and Australia. So far, President Yudhoyono, a retired Army general, has refused to discipline any senior police officials for corruption or human rights violations. The president has also raised new human rights concerns by naming the police chief of Jakarta, who was implicated in the killing of student activists in the late 1990s, to run the national police. The Republicans, who swept into power in Congress and state capitals, promised to deliver austerity budgets and a renewed focus on slashing deficits at the cost of public employees and social programs for the poor. Yet progressive economists warn that cutting the federal deficit will not address the basic crisis in the American economy, which is the shortage of good-paying jobs and a broken credit system. According to the American Prospect magazine, the largest share of the current federal deficit is caused by the current recession and the jobless recovery, with unemployment still hovering near 10%. Strong economic growth and healthy job expansion will only return when flaws in the private sector economy are fixed. The economy continues to suffer from a hangover from the mortgage meltdown, and Wall Street is still deleveraging its exposure in exotic credit instruments. Economists like James K. Galbraith say the federal government must do more to directly create jobs. This may increase the federal deficit in the short run, but will boost economic growth rates and will give businesses more confidence to invest. Meanwhile, deficit hawks are pressing to find ways to cut Social Security and Medicare, which would hurt the most vulnerable citizens. Fontana, California, east of Los Angeles, is a central distribution hub for Walmart and other big box retailers. Here, dozens of warehouses filled with low-paid immigrant workers sort and repackage goods shipped from China for consumers shopping at Walmart, Target, Lowe's, and Home Depot. On the ground, the mostly Latino workforce in Fontana has few basic rights to fight for a decent wage and good benefits like health care because they work for temporary employment agencies and not the big box retailers. Warehouse jobs usually pay $8 to $12 an hour. A year ago, the Change to Win Union Federation launched a broad-based union campaign in Fontana that sought to put pressure on Walmart's warehouses. But the union drive fell apart as the local unemployment rate hit 15% and Congress failed to act on the Employee Free Choice Act. Now, labor leaders are seeking help from the U.S. Labor Department to strictly enforce the Fair Labor Standards Act in warehouses and look for violations of the minimum wage and maximum hour standards. This week's news summary was compiled by Bob Nixon. For Between the Lines, I'm Richard Hill.
Aftermath of the 2010 congressional election, which saw Republicans in a sweeping victory take control of the House of Representatives, gain at least 6 Senate seats, and win a majority of governor's races across the country, commentators are attempting to translate the message sent by an angry electorate. In a post-election press conference, President Obama appeared contrite and admitted he was responsible for failure to better communicate his accomplishments to voters. But historical precedent forecast that the president's party would almost certainly lose seats in Congress in any midterm election, and with the economy in the worst shape since the Great Depression, a very bad year for Democrats was inevitable. Beltway pundits, however, declare that the reason for the Democrats' shellacking, in the words of the president, was due to his moving too far to the left, and that his smartest political move now would be to quickly move to the center to adopt the Republican agenda. Progressive activists reject this narrative as missing the real message sent by voters on November 2nd. A post-election survey conducted by pollster Stan Greenberg for Democracy Corps and the Campaign for America's Future found that voters did not give the GOP a mandate to push for conservative policies, and that Obama and the Democrats' best strategy for winning the White House and making gains in Congress in 2012 is to stand up for progressive values. Between the Lines, Scott Harris spoke with Robert Borsage, co-founder of Campaign for America's Future, who talks about the poll and why he believes Democrats need to embrace a bold plan for job creation while protecting programs like Social Security.
This was an electorate that was far more conservative than it was 2 years ago. About 40% of voters called themselves conservative. It was older, whiter, and clearly tilted towards the more conservative side of the spectrum. On the other hand, what was interesting in the poll is that there's really no mandate for a conservative agenda and great skepticism about it. The economy was the overriding issue, needless to say. When we asked people, where do we go from here, even though the electorate was tilted conservative, we got far from conservative answers. So, for example, on spending, asked to choose between cutting spending to help balance the budget or spending more to create jobs, the voting public that went out on Tuesday split between those two options. There was no real mandate for deep cuts in spending. On taxes, a greater number, a majority, supported either repealing all of the Bush tax cuts or repealing those for people making more than $250,000 rather than the Republican position, which was supported about 39% of the population to keep all the tax cuts in place. Going forward, we tested the Republican pledge platform, which is cut 20% out of domestic spending, cut taxes on small business, sustain the Bush tax cuts, versus invest in new jobs, in science and technology, and new energy agenda. And the majority of those people voting on Tuesday who elected Republicans chose the more aggressive invest and move us forward agenda. So there was clearly a conservative electorate that came out. The conservative base was roused. The liberal base was not nearly as big as it was in 08 and was clearly discouraged. The enthusiasm gap was real, I believe. But that conservative majority that voted for Republicans did not vote for a conservative mandate on policy.
Now, Robert, in your view, and we hear a lot of discussion in our news media by the columnists and pundits on television, the view is that the Democrats should move right, just like Bill Clinton did, you know, after he was handed a defeat by Newt Gingrich and the Republicans when they took over the House, first time they held the House in more than 40 years at that point in time. There's a lot of ideas out there that Obama should triangulate, like Mr. Clinton did when he came back to win the presidency for a second time back in 1996.
Well, I think that view gets Clinton wrong and certainly gives bad advice to the president. I think what we saw this year is how a mobilized base, in this case on the right, not only mobilizes itself and gets itself out, but it helps to attract what are called independents. Independents aren't a defined group of people with fixed views. They tend to be a group that pays very little attention to politics, has less information. So when the partisans of one party are excited and arguing their case, they tend to get out those independents that lean towards that party and to win some of the undecided ones. When the partisans are discouraged, as they were, say, after Katrina with George Bush, then they don't argue the case, they don't get their own independent-leaning voters out, and they have less effect in convincing the truly undecided. And so the notion that you tack to the prevailing wind, that you go to small measures that can gain bipartisan agreement, position yourself in the center, I think is a wrong-headed piece of advice if your goal is simply to win independent voters, so-called independent voters.
It seems that for many decades now, and especially in the last few years, the Republican Party, their main mission seems to be dismantle the New Deal programs that were born in the Great Depression under Franklin Delano Roosevelt, and therefore Social Security and other bulwarks of the New Deal could be on the chopping block here, and shouldn't President Obama be the bulwark against that, in addition to fighting against the growing income disparity in this country? These are popular issues, and it seems that the Obama administration has not really keyed into it.
My answer to that is absolutely. I think standing up, not just for the New Deal programs, but for the basic notion of a social contract, the sense that we're going to sustain a broad middle class, we're going to empower workers to get a fair share of the profits and productivity they create, and we're going to fight for that against the interests that too often dominate our politics, I think that's both good policy and good politics. And Republicans are on the wrong side of all of these issues. They're particularly on the wrong side of the staggering Gilded Age inequality we now experience. Democrats have to find, and the president has to find, a populist voice to begin to address these questions.
That was Robert Borsage, co-founder of the Campaign for America's Future. Contact the campaign by calling area code 202-955-5665 or visit their website at ourfuture.org. One of the few bright spots for progressives in this year's election was the resounding defeat of Proposition 23 in California, which would have suspended the state's groundbreaking climate change law, AB 32, until unemployment dropped to 5.5% for four consecutive quarters, an unlikely if not impossible scenario for the foreseeable future. A diverse coalition emerged to fight the proposition, which was largely funded by two Texas-based oil companies. In the campaign to defeat Proposition 23, about $30 million was raised by the referendum's opponents, with big donations from environmental groups and wealthy individuals, including Microsoft co-founder Bill Gates and film director James Cameron. An estimated $10 million was contributed to the campaign supporting Proposition 23, mostly from Texas-based oil companies Valero Services and Tesoro, along with funds from conservative organizations. Between the Lines, Melinda Tuhus spoke with Larry Fahn, a former president of the Sierra Club, who continues to serve on the environmental group's board. Fahn, a leader in the fight to defeat Proposition 23, talks about how the victory was achieved and what success at the ballot box means for clean energy in California and the nation. He also looks at the passage of another California referendum question that has raised concerns about whether AB 32 can successfully be implemented.
The environmental community was very united and got assistance from not only Governor Schwarzenegger and people like George Shultz, as well as Silicon Valley entrepreneurs and people in the green technology field. And we ran a very tight campaign. We got a lot of public support from the rank and file of the environmental groups. The Sierra Club was very prominent in its outreach, along with Credo Mobile, part of Working Assets, a lot of environmental justice organizations, and groups that were really concerned about climate change and about the need to continue to make progress in the transition to a green economy and to renewable energy. We also did outreach to newspapers. We ended up getting about 50 California newspapers all publishing editorials against Proposition 23. So a lot of really wonderful things came together, and we succeeded beyond our expectations by more than 60-40 margin.
Well, there were big spenders on both sides of the issue. You had the Texas-based oil companies pushing Prop 23, and then you had some big movie moguls like James Cameron and some high-tech green energy gurus giving big bucks to oppose it. But did regular folks contribute much to the No on 23 campaign?
Absolutely, there was. The Prop 23 website had ways people could donate, and a lot of regular folks donated to a group called Communities Against Prop 23, which was an effort to reach out to Hispanics, African Americans, labor, and other sort of parts of the progressive community that aren't particularly known to be strong environmentalists. And a lot of regular folks donated small amounts. I should add, however, that we were really disappointed at the end of the day because there was another proposition, Proposition number 26, which would require a two-thirds vote before any new fees could be assessed in the state of California, and that would be fees for oil spill, fees for covering the costs of smoking, health care issues, and all of that. And about a month out, we started adding the No on 26 message to the No on 23 message, but we were unsuccessful. And a lot of the same interests that were behind the effort to undo the climate change legislation, Prop 23, like the oil companies, were in behind the effort to pass Proposition 26, and they prevailed on that one.
Do you think that will make implementation of AB 32 more difficult or maybe even impossible?
Well, it's still uncertain. All of the regulations implementing AB 32 are still being developed as we speak. There are a number of people that are concerned that this new Proposition 26 may somehow stymie the effort to implement AB 32, but that might need to be unraveled in the courts as well.
Larry Fine, what, if anything, has already been done to implement AB 32?
Well, again, all of that, the implementation is being done by the California Air Resources Board, and I know that they have drafted a very lengthy series of regulations that is the beginning steps of the implementation, but it's very preliminary, and they're taking comments, and it's still all in the works.
What do you think this one says when there was a concrete threat to an existing law that people rallied to save it? As opposed to not being able to get any energy legislation through Congress, what do you think the lesson is for the rest of the country?
Well, I think what we've learned is that the citizens in California really understand that global warming is a real threat and we need to take action to deal with it. And furthermore, the action that we take, rather than being harmful to the economy, will be helpful to the economy because it has the potential for creating hundreds of thousands of new jobs in what we call the clean energy sector. From building windmills and solar panels and rehabbing and retrofitting old buildings to some of the new technologies for biofuels and algae-based energy. There's a tremendous amount of new innovation going on here in California, and the citizens realize that and want to see that continue, and they want to see a really productive transition to a clean energy future.
That was Larry Fine, former president of the Sierra Club, who currently heads the group As You Sow, which promotes corporate responsibility. Visit their website at asyousow.org or the Sierra Club's website at sierraclub.org. While anger at high unemployment and a sluggish economy was a driving force motivating many voters to cast ballots to throw incumbents out of office during November's midterm congressional election, the spreading of false and malicious information was another important contributing element. An estimated $4 billion was spent in the election campaign, with much of it dedicated to television advertising. Many of these ads targeting Democrats were purchased by groups like the U.S. Chamber of Commerce and Karl Rove's Crossroads GPS that were funded this year by anonymous donors, thanks to the Supreme Court Citizens United versus FEC ruling that opened the floodgates to record amounts of covert corporate campaign cash. Examples of blatantly false ads aired in the campaign included one that declared that under the new health care reform legislation, citizens would be arrested if they failed to purchase mandated health insurance, illustrated by a man standing in handcuffs. Another ad asserted that Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid, Democrat of Nevada, had supported a bill that provided Viagra to convicted sexual predators, purchased with taxpayer dollars. While some media outlets fact-checked the most outrageous political ads and candidates' false assertions, the majority of election news coverage was dedicated to the horse race between Democrats and Republicans, with less attention paid to substantive issues affecting voters. Between the Lines, Scott Harris spoke with Robert Greenwald, award-winning documentary film producer and director, whose films include Walmart, The High Cost of Low Price, and Outfoxed, Rupert Murdoch's War on Journalism. Greenberg, whose company Brave New Films produced ads this year for some California Democratic candidates, discusses the role of corporate media in the 2010 congressional election and ways in which progressive grassroots media can effectively compete in the information marketplace.
Well, I don't think it's a surprise to any of your listeners, I'm sure, what has happened when you put literally millions and billions of dollars into the system. It unfortunately becomes a case, a potential case, of the highest bidder winning the most votes. And it means that those of us who believe in democracy will need to be even more active and raise our voices louder and louder. The good news in California, despite Meg Whitman spending over $170 million of her own money, she did lose the election. But that was the result of hard work, organizing, and the fact, finally here, that people wanted to blow up their television sets. They were so angry because of all of her commercials, which was actually the video we did showing the rage at the fact you couldn't turn on a radio or television without Meg being in your face. But what we do at Brave New Films, you know, we really work on getting people involved with our videos, whether it's the full-length films or a lot of the short videos. And we're doing it in interesting ways now to counter this money bomb. We're very, very active on Facebook, where we have the largest Latino-oriented Facebook page called Cuéntame. We have Rethink Afghanistan Facebook page, over 50,000 people who focus on getting up every day and working and passing along information and videos and taking actions to end the war. So it's tough when you see the millions and the billions. But there really is an opportunity for people to be involved and take action.
Robert, as you look at the role our news media plays in these election cycles, of course, the television stations have an enormous amount of profit from the billions spent on TV ads. How does that, in your view, affect their reporting of the election? As I see it, much of the reporting about our elections is about horse race stuff. Who's up, who's down, percentage points, polls, not much about issues, not much about domestic issues, or certainly not much about our foreign policy issues, such as the two wars we're fighting right now. How does the media skew the debate into what many feel is a sort of this meaningless set of poll numbers?
It's really an example of why we need independent media. And again, why I'm so proud of and pleased of what we do at Brave New Films and Brave New Foundation. You have a corporate media, a media driven by profit, where news has become another way that the networks look to make a dollar. The way they look to sports, the way they look to wrestling, they're totally interchangeable, which is truly a travesty, right? The public airwaves, which are ours, have been lent or leased to the networks, and they have now decided that news, like everything else, must return a profit. So when you have that, you have a race to the bottom. And it's truly horrific to see the amount of time put on scandal, on drunken actors and actresses getting out of rehab, and car chases, which may get higher ratings in some case, but serve no function in terms of the importance of a democracy and the country we live in. And these very same stations and networks made extraordinary sums of money, as you just pointed out, off of the election campaign. So it's another reason that people need to be involved with independent media, with progressive media, so that we can continue to use the internet and continue to use our resources so that people speak loudly and clearly about the truths of what are going on today.
Robert, in this election cycle, we saw a lot of money flow to campaign TV advertising without any accountability. These were anonymous sponsors of these ads, and many of them crossed the line of credulity in terms of spreading blatantly false and malicious information. Although the situation was bad before, it seems like it's going to get worse before it gets better. I don't know what solution we're going to arrive at in this country for reining in these billions of corporate dollars. It may take a constitutional amendment, but where do you see things headed in terms of the kind of circus atmosphere of lie after lie after lie on our TV sets?
Well, it's not a pretty picture, as you know, and the indication is that it's going to get worse with the influx of this disgusting amount of corporate money. The options for us are to turn off the televisions, turn off the radios, to stop watching, to stop listening, and also to hit pretty hard at those who are distorting and who are making the lies. The media will respond for factual inaccuracies, as we've seen somewhat in this last election, certainly not enough, but if we all kind of do our job. I think the problem is that there's so much garbage, so much lies, and so much distortion that there is a tendency for people to throw up their hands. And when that happens, then the voice of corporatism has won, and we need to fight that every single day.
That was Robert Greenwald, award-winning documentary film producer and director. His latest film is titled Rethinking Afghanistan. To learn more about Greenwald's films, visit his website at bravenewfilms.org. You've been listening to Between the Lines, a weekly program presenting news and analysis of critical issues affecting our region, the nation, and the world. Between the Lines is produced and distributed by Squeaky Wheel Productions. If you have suggestions for topics and guests, please contact Between the Lines by calling area code 203-268-8446 or write to Between the Lines, care of Squeaky Wheel Productions, P.O. Box 110176, Trumbull, Connecticut 06611. Visit our newly redesigned website at btlonline.org to hear our current and archived programs in MP3 and streaming audio. There you can subscribe to free weekly podcasts, program summaries, and interview transcripts. Our theme music was written by Richard Hill and Jody Gray and performed by Mika Ta. This week's program was produced by Scott Harris with the assistance of Richard Hill, Hank Hoffman, Anna Manzo, Bob Nixon, Gary Trujillo, Melinda Tuhus, and Jeff Yates. For Between the Lines, I'm Denise Manzari.